But it was all that I could do to keep from crying.
Well, you know who had his ashes spread at home plate?
The dude that did the Go Cubs Go song.
Yeah,
wasn't his name Goodman?
Steve Goodman.
You know what else he wrote?
He wrote the perfect country and western song, and then he sent it to either Waylon Jennings or one of those guys.
Well, a friend of mine named Steve Goodman wrote that song, and he told me it was the perfect country and western song.
They read it, and they said, this is almost perfect, but you didn't mention anything about mama or prison.
Because he hadn't said anything at all about mama.
Or train. Or pickup trucks.
Or trucks.
So then Goodwin allegedly wrote the next verse, which was, it was raining the day my mama got out of prison.
The day my mom got out of prison. And I went to pick her up. She got run over by a damned old train. And I'll hang around as long as you will let me. And I never mind it standing in the rain. Oh, you don't have to call me.
Jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. We are live.
Well, on Opex Stocks and Jocks, I'm talking about Jim Lawler on the board. S&P futures up 33, NASDAQ futures up 150. We were down last week. It looked like we're starting this week to the way up. Everything, money in the system, money for nothing, and your chicks for free. But everything's up. Gold's up, silver's up, you name it. Everything is to the moon, Alice, and... we have the Bears win, we have the Cubs win, the Sox win. I mean, could life be any better? Just saying. What else Steve Goodman wrote was The City of New Orleans. I don't know if you knew that or not, Jimmy.
No, I did not.
There was a guy who used to run a place called The Quiet Night. Don't think that was around when you were young. It was at Belmont and Sheffield. On the southeast corner on the second floor, big, huge building. So the second floor was actually real big. Now it's broken up into tattoo parlors and God knows what else. He had a club up there, and he had amazing amounts of people come through there. So I saw Siegel Schwal there a bunch of times. I saw Seals and Crofts the night before they issued their album, and a couple other people that were darn good. And and he was the guy who... Steve Goodman was singing the City of New Orleans, and he said, that's a fantastic song. And the problem is, if you sing it, it won't go anywhere. It just so happened that Arlo Guthrie was playing there. And he said, why don't you give the song to this guy? It'll be a hit, and you guys can sort of share. And the rest is history.
I don't know. I remember that club, yes. I don't know if it was called that when I went there, but there was a band. You could see bands. There was a pool hall, this and that. This was twenty years ago.
Did you kick your volume up just to hear?
20 years ago.
There you go. Yeah, it was. I don't know when the City of New Orleans came out. It was long more than 20 years ago. But I don't think I just gave it up or he died or what. But he had all kinds of people coming through there. He had his one band. It sounded really good. I said to the waitress, God, these guys aren't bad. She goes, you'll hear all about them tomorrow. I go, what do you mean? She goes, they're issuing their first album. It's terrific. They're called Seals and Crofts. And I go, yeah, they are pretty good. Oops.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, hey, these guys are pretty good. Yeah, they were pretty good. So what do we got going here? We got the Bears on a black field goal. But, you know, those guys, that field goal, that took forever. You're never supposed to be able to block it from the side. And they did.
They did. I mean, we escaped. It was not a pretty game at all. Caleb Williams was feeling Max Crosby all day. He was we were double teaming him. He got his first interception. Now, he supposedly has a 7-foot wingspan, which is he does tip a lot of balls. He gets his hands on a lot of balls, and he was giving Caleb problems all day. And I don't know why, but we didn't go at him. I mean, he very aggressive. He goes right at the quarterback. And, you know, you could probably do a counter or this or that, but we didn't do that. But we pulled it out, and the Cubs pulled it out. The Sox, I think, also won. And, unfortunately, I did watch the Ryder Cup. It was a strong comeback, but not enough.
I was reading all the criticism last night of the captain. Was it Keegan Bradley was the captain? And he put a team together on Saturday for both rounds, evidently, that had Morikawa and some other guy in there. Neither one of them had a banger, so they lost both rounds, evidently. And I think Scotty Scheffler lost both rounds, but that thing is 3 days. They play five rounds, two Friday, two Saturday, and one Sunday. So I mean, it's quite the the physical event, especially on a course like that. So. He lives on, you know, pretty scary stuff. But we have...
Hold on.
We have the... We're looking at the... I'm looking for two things here. One is, I want to find out the... we had a death yesterday that I don't think people actually was... last week, we had a death, and there's a guy here. What the hell happened to it? There it is. Probably nobody's ever heard of this guy. Lieutenant Colonel George Hardy was an original member of the Tuskegee Airmen, which was the all-black fighter group that was over in Britain when they figured out, hey, guess what? Black guys can fly planes. Duh. He was the youngest member. He was 19 in 1945. And you look at the world now where everybody just spends their... Not everybody. A lot of people just seem to spend their whole day arguing with people on the internet back and forth. I mean, it's so bizarre. With seemingly literally nothing else to do. born on June 8, 1925 in Philadelphia, which is good for him, he joined the U.S. Army Air Corps at age 18 in July 1943 and started pilot training at Tuskegee Airfield in December of that year. He graduated in September 44 at the age 19. He's commissioned as a second lieutenant. It's going to take... I'll go through this, but it's worth it for this guy. During World War II, he was part of the 332nd Fighter Group at Ramitelli Air Base, Italy, and assigned to the 99th Fighter Squad. He completed... We're talking about the last Tuskegee Airman guy from World War II, Jimmy. Died at 100. He completed 21 missions across Europe. Part of the U.S. Air Force, 21 missions. That's a lot to get up and have people shooting at you. He was the youngest Red Tail fighter pilot with the Tuskegee Airmen, the first black aviators of the U.S. Armed Forces, according to the Tuskegee Airmen. The interesting part is when he came out, he left Italy as a first lieutenant and returned to Tuskegee Army Airfield, where he was a supervising pilot until 1946 when it closed. They went back home to Philadelphia before attending New York University, getting married in 1947. Now, here's the rub. Obviously, the guy comes out of Army Air Force, and he was, I'm assuming he was privy to the GI Bill. Now, the GI Bill, and this is one of the reasons, I think, that you'll find, to be honest with you, a lot of blacks and women did not make the jump to the middle class like a lot of the white people, the veterans. Or the single biggest class-changing law ever in this country was the GI Bill. all these people who went to college from families, blue-collar families, all of a sudden, and I went to the Army. If you survived, you got to go to college for free. And that's what happened to my stepfather. It happened to all kinds of people. But the problem is, it covered, essentially, black people. And it also had mortgage stuff in there. A lot of people don't know that, but it had a way to get mortgages. So if you were able to take care of that, you went from being, you know, somebody who shoveled coal or whatever to maybe having a degree and being an executive and whatever else. Because there weren't a whole lot of people going to college in those days. However, the black people that lived in the South, you couldn't get into state universities. Now, I don't know, Jimmy, if you could get into Grambling and places like that. I suppose you could have, but it wasn't, it didn't happen all that much. And oh, by the way, I don't think black people in the South were able to get mortgages. So you get a cheaper mortgage, but you can't get a mortgage. The other thing is none of the women who were involved in World War II were eligible as well, which is even kind of more bizarre, especially since some of them stayed in the armed forces, whatever they were, and when they dug up graves of bodies, matched the bodies to the dog tags. Can you imagine that job, going and digging up graves that have been there 2 years? That's what happened to my uncle.
No, I really can't.
They would take the one dog tag off, they know you were in this grave, and then they would, after the war, they went back and dug up the bodies, and mostly it was all women that identified the bodies. That has to be, I can't even imagine that job. Anyway, this guy, he was sent to Guam in 1949. The following year, the Korean War began. He was transferred to Okinawa. During the Korean War, he flew 45 combat missions, and when a good take to the skies, the conflict for the Vietnam War, he flew another 70. Compare the stones of this dude to somebody sitting around the internet doing nothing but fighting with people and telling you want to kill people. Kind of a different pair of stones on this dude, or what?
Very much. It brings to a good point. I was watching the 60-minute interview of the Governor Cox from Utah, who thinks the biggest cancer that we have is called social media. He goes, these algorithms are really tearing us apart because, you know, it finds out who you are, what you are, and then it feeds you the information that you want to hear. And he's like, it's tearing us apart. And I could definitely see that with this, you know, back in the day with this guy, you know, not being able to get a bill in the South and maybe not going to be able to go to college.
Well, he was from Pennsylvania and he went to NYU, so he was okay.
Okay. But it was a good point that the governor brought up, that these algorithms now, if you're searching for, let's say, Nazi right wing, this or that, it now thinks you are, and it'll feed you right wing, you know, information. I mean, and I think he has a real point. I think it's too easy to, people don't do their homework. They just expect the internet now, and again, he doesn't have an answer for it. Is it up to Meta? Is it up to Google? Is it up to Amazon to, you know, rope in these algorithms? Because that's what feeds these people.
My view on this, not all, always, is that, you know, I ask myself, why don't I get caught up watching Fox or
Newsmax.
Newsmax or whatever the left-wing side of it is. Because I have a job. I don't have, when people say, do you listen to this on daytime TV? During the day, I'm watching the news stuff. I'm trying to find trades for my people. I have a job, dude. I can't be, how can I be watching that? I'll say crap on either side. How can I spend my time doing that when I have something to do? Mm. If you're a welder, all day long and you're welding, how do you listen to Fox News? Or how do you listen to MSNBC or whatever the other one is? I mean, what is with this? How many of these kids aren't working and living in their parents' basement doing nothing? I got out of grad school. My mother said, well, you got to do something. I started remodeling houses because I didn't have a job right away. I'm like, and then I got a job. But, I mean, you're not sitting here all day. You better find something. I don't care what it is. Go drive a cab. I mean, I don't. This whole idea that nobody has anything to do. Some of the most, they just happen to be right wingers. One guy's a retired policeman. He has nothing to do. He sits there and listens to two right wing stations with headphones on from a radio station, which I guess there's radio stations too, or podcasts or something. I don't know. You know, if you had a job, how do you do that? I mean, most people, if you're busy, I was listening to, unfortunately, I think in some place I go, there's constant Fox News on. All they did was talk for a half hour about the incredible attack on Trump with this escalator stopping. Isn't it kind of obvious to everybody that one of his own people kicked the button? Not on purpose. I mean, what are we doing here? How do you make this, you know, this massive deal? I mean, I happen to know a little bit about escalators because my job was to turn the one off at the CPOE if there ever was a fire. There's like three ways you can stop it. One, if somebody really gets their sleeve caught in the banister and a banister stops, the whole thing will shut off. Or if somebody gets their foot caught in the stair, which actually happened somewhere down here, and somebody lost a toe because they had a flip-flop on like an idiot. The other is you run up and hit the button on the bottom. Well, evidently, somebody was carrying along with the Trump entourage. Somebody hit the button. And the thing stopped, and nobody's hurt. How long can we whine about this? I mean, for God's sake. This is very irregular. This must have been. I guarantee you, if I would have snuck up, there's no way I could sneak up into the president's group, reach down, and hit that button. I'm not that stealthy. Nobody is, unless you found a mouse to do it. Just saying.
I mean, don't say things like that, Chief. I mean, there'll be conspiracies.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same with the teleprompter. I mean, in North Carolina, they had two shootings by two ex-Marines.
Yeah. No, they're all from illegals. They're all from immigrants, every shooting.
I'm reading it, both of these guys are ex-Marines. Thomas Jacob Stanford, I don't...
Does anybody know what their bitch was? Why?
No, but they do fit the unfortunate profile of being a white male between 20 and 40 years old.
We were there once.
We were there once.
I don't think I killed anybody.
No, they don't know. But, you know, now we have ICE in the loop, armed and ready to go.
They're only looking for people with outstanding warrants. That is so insane, I can't, whatever. Hey, what about the baseball? The playoff schedule, I can't believe the Cubs are playing all 3 day games in the afternoon.
For those apparently, yes.
Not apparently, I'm reading the schedule.
208.
All 3 days, assuming it goes three. Well, the Reds did beat the Mets because they had the tiebreaker, right? So they have the same record. I think the Reds are going to give the Dodgers more than they can handle.
Well, here's news. Someone just hit the longest field goal outdoors, 65 yards.
What was I reading with Lou on Thursday that the way they can monkey with the balls, they actually shave the nubs off the ball, so they're all going like 5 yards further than they used to. You can actually shave the ball.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I admit, but yesterday, supposedly at half, the guy outdoors in Tampa Bay, it was 100 degrees on the field, they said.
Wow.
And he kicked a 65-yarder. Now, yeah. I don't know what the record is. Looks like, by the way, the Reds are in. The Mets are out.
Yeah, they're tied. And the Reds had the tiebreaker.
And they have to play Cincinnati.
No, the Reds are playing the Dodgers.
Cincinnati Dodgers. Here's a good one. Boston has to play New York in New York.
Let's look. All right, the Phillies have the Brewers have the best overall record. The Phillies have 96 wins, so those guys have a bye.
Correct.
Which leaves the three wild card teams are the Cubs, the Reds, and the Padres.
Yes.
So the Dodgers get to play the crummiest wild card team, which is the Reds. And the top wild card team, which is the Cubs, gets to play the Padres at home.
Correct.
So the playoff schedule is tomorrow, which would be Tuesday. The Tigers are playing Tigers are playing the Guardians in Cleveland at 12:08. Who ended up winning that? Oh, Cleveland must have.
Yeah, Cleveland must have won. Dodgers snuck in. The Detroit snuck in. Tigers snuck in.
Well, they snuck into the wild card, but they were the best team in baseball for three quarters of the year and barely snuck in. Okay, so tomorrow it's the Tigers and the Guardians at 12:08. The Padres and the Cubs at 2:08. At 5:08, it's the Red Sox and the Yankees, and then the Dodgers at home in L.A. are 8:08. So there's four games. There you go. Same schedule on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Well, you know the Dodgers are going to be last, so...
Sure.
So 12:08 Central Time is what? It's 11:08 out in Cleveland. Right?
Yeah, it would be 11 in the morning. That is correct.
That's interesting. And then on Wednesday, I think it's the same. Let's see. On Wednesday, it is same thing. The Guardians at 12:08, the Cubs at 2:08, and the Yankees at 5:08, and Dodgers at now Thursday. I wonder if they're going to move these times. If the Dodgers and the Yankees, if those series only go two games. I have to believe they're going to move the Guardians and the Cubs later in the day, but maybe not.
Well, they're all on ESPN or ABC.
Yeah, they got the two stations. But, I mean, if the Dodgers win two in a row, and so do the Yankees, do you really think they're going to go without a night game on Thursday?
I don't know.
I bet that, and then I think we have the playoff series start Saturday. So there's one day off, Friday, one travel day. So there you go. So somebody, then the Cubs would end up playing
the Brewers.
The Brewers, yeah.
The Cubs would play the Brewers.
To be determined, to be determined. Everything's to be determined. So there you go. That's the final standings of the baseball. Probably the most disappointing team. You say it is probably Baltimore, eh?
Yes.
They won 90-some games last year, and this year not so much. But they lost... They lost a couple guys at free agency, and one of their other good guys got hurt, right? They came in last. So the Blue Jays, the Yankees, and the Red Sox all got in from that division. And the Rays and then the other two teams were under 500. American League Central, the Guardians end up beating the Tigers flat out. And then the Mariners are in, and the Astros almost made it, but they didn't. The Red Sox beat them by two games.
Colorado did not break the Sox record. They ended up at 43 wins, 119 losses. So,
I'm going to say the Braves 10 games under 500. They were a disappointment as well. They were supposed to be good, weren't they?
Yeah. And Chicago White Sox ended the season 60 wins and 102 losses. So that's 2 years running with 100 losses.
Three, I believe.
Okay.
Are the Cardinals, were they supposed to suck, or were they lost? They lost a lot of.
I don't know, but they were not very competitive this year at all.
The Giants and the Diamondbacks were right in there until. In fact, the Diamondbacks were catching up in the last 10 games. They were 3-7. That doesn't help.
Yeah, the Diamondbacks lost the last five games.
Yeah, and the Rockies were. Got 265 is your percentage. That pretty much sucks. So the Sox were what? 10 games better? 15 games better than last year. Their run differential is way better. The team is better, but they're still like not so hot. What do you make of the football this early?
It's tough to tell. The real question that I have is this college. It's a lot more competitive now that you can buy a team for a year.
Yep. Well, LSU lost. Penn State lost.
That was not too surprising. I mean, that was
Oregon's good.
Yeah, Oregon's good. LSU was kind of surprising. Bama won. Notre Dame won.
I was listening to my guys all day long. I mean, it's like a stream of consciousness. And Arkansas—they were kind of pretenders. They were terrible.
But there are some teams that were just upset constantly. So we're going to have a mix-up today on who exactly is going to be the number... Well, I think Ohio State will still be number one.
Yeah,
But there is a mix-up in the top 10 again because you know, Georgia was in the top 10. LSU was in the top 10.
Georgia lost to Alabama.
Right. They all lost. So
Ole Miss beat, they beat somebody good, too. Who the hell they beat?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Florida State also lost. They lost to Virginia.
Yeah, no, Ole Miss bumped up on somebody. But I remember looking at the NFL. What, the Bills, they're 4-0. Hardly anybody 4-0. The Chargers lost. Too bad, Jim Harbaugh. Then we get over the East Division. The Bills are 4-0. The Patriots are 2-2, which is better than we thought they were going to be. And the Jets and the Dolphins are both 0-3. So they're already, like, out of it, right? I mean, in the West, you've got the Chargers 3-1, the Chiefs 2-2. The Chiefs beat the Ravens.
They beat the Ravens. The Ravens are not as good as as everyone thinks. I mean, they started out good, and then they had a loss. And as someone says, Patrick Mahomes has Lamar Jackson's number.
Yeah.
Lamar Jackson, I think, out of 8 times, he's only won once. It's a ridiculous record. Mahomes has a much better record.
By the way, is what's his name still engaged, or did they break it off?
Kelsey, far as I know.
And I read something on the, I didn't watch it, saw something on the YouTube. She says they're no longer. I think they are still in it. You know, here's a surprise team, the Steelers.
I don't know.
Well, they're 3-1. Bengals 2-1, and the Ravens. Ravens are 1-3.
The Steelers are always somewhat competitive.
Well, they got a real good coach. They always. I didn't realize the Ravens were 1-3. And the Browns are 1-3. Yikes. So the Bears have to play that whole division.
Yes.
And then we got the Colts 3-1, Jaguars 3-1, Texans 1-3, Titans 0-4. Titans aren't so much Titans, are they?
Nope.
All right, real quick on the National Conference, then we'll head off to break. Eagles 4-0, no surprise there. Commanders 2-2. They lost to somebody crummy.
Atlanta last yesterday.
Cowboys 1-2-1. I didn't make it through the overtime period last night. It was a pretty good game, though. Giants 1-3. They suck. Then we've got the 49ers 3-1. Seahawks 3-1. Rams 3-1. There's the division right there. The 49ers lost, though, too. And then the Cardinals 2-2. So that's the division. Then the NFC North, we got the Lions 3-1. Packers 2-1. Vikings 2-2. Bears 2-2. I still only have the Bears winning 4 games. But they might be able to beat the Minnesota or the Packers, I think. Buccaneers 3-1. I don't know if I can guess that. Falcons 2-2. Panthers 1-3. The Saints 0-4. I got the Bears beating the Saints. So there. SP Futures up 28. NASDAQ Futures up 132. We're very bullish today. Not exactly sure why, but we are. Doesn't matter. We want to go up every day. And last week we did not. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Louis, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al, Jimmy Lawler in studio. Matt Byrne on the board. SP Futures up 30 now. NASDAQ Futures up 139. After a bad week, we should have all got even longer. I mean, we're nice and long as it is, but even longer. Well, look at these. Dow futures up 169 over in Europe. We've got the DAX up 7, call that flat. FTSE up 51.5%. CAC around up 9, call that 1.1%. So not much going on there except for the FTSE. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 311.7%. Hang Seng up 494, that's almost 2%. Shanghai up 34.9%. Sony Financial Group share is 15% in trading debut. Sony Financial Group, what the hell are they? Have to find that out for tomorrow. Bonds down 2 basis points, 2.72. Japan, U.S. is down 3 basis points, 4.15. It's the Bund down 2 basis points, 2.72. They switched up the order here. Oil down 128, but still at 64.44. Looked like a breakout. Now we're coming back the other way. Brent down 119, 68.94. Natural gas down 3 cents, 3.17. Gold on a tear again, up $43, 38.52. Silver up 56 cents, 47.22. Copper up 3 cents, 4.78. It looks like the value of the dollar is going down, down, down. Everything else going up, up, up. We have the FX. We get euro back up over 117. The British pound 134.29. So dollar falls. Before U.S. data, amid shutdown concerns, yen outperforms. There you go. What do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Yeah, good morning, everyone. It's currently 6:38 a.m. on September 29th, 2025. Let's look at weather real quick in Chicago. 63 degrees at O'Hare and 65 at Midway. High of around 87 today. Sunny skies. Tonight, mostly clear skies and a low of 64. Down in Phoenix, Arizona, 71 degrees right now. Temperature is set to reach 94 today. And in sports, yeah, you guys did most of the NFL earlier, but I'll do a blast of the Bears. We saw the Bears win their second of the season. Bears took down the Raiders in a narrow 25-24. Bears are 2-2 this season. As the NFC currently stands, NFC North that is, Detroit at the top with 3-1, Packers next 2-1, and Viking and Bears tied for the bottom 2-2. Tonight, Jets play Dolphins at 6:15, and Bengals play Broncos at 7:15. That's all I got, Chief. Over to you.
We have Mr. Flanagan?
We do indeed, yeah.
So, morning, Jan, how are you?
Good, yourself?
I'm hanging in there, you know, kind of riding herd on some of these positions. I have problems on valuing some of our biggest positions. Well, we've got some of our stuff is a little odd because a lot of the people we have didn't want to be in the Magnificent Seven. So we have a lot of people in the metals, a lot of people in the XLV. A lot of people in the Russell and all that stuff is up there, but these metals are absolutely on a tear. And the thing of it is, though, I don't think you can trade them. Actually, you probably almost can't even trade the market as if it's the market. You almost have to trade it based on the dollar value, which is really, really tough. I mean, we started the year, I think the GDX was 35, and it's one of my biggest positions for my people. And now it's 76. Now, we've been dragging puts always, so we didn't make the whole $40, but that's unbelievable. I mean, it's, you know, you love making money, but you're like, good Lord, how long can this last? And you look at it and you say, all right, wait a minute. I don't like it as well at 76 as I did at 35, duh. But on the other hand, if we have an administration that, in order to do whatever they're doing, they're going to start putting money supply back in at 6-8% to essentially cover over an economy that's slowing down in real terms. It's just going to keep going. I mean, it may not even have started yet. So I don't know which is which. I mean, I honestly don't. I mean, it adds a totally other variable to the thing. And to be perfectly honest, for a long period of time, I've managed money for people for a while. for a period of time, a long period of time, we did okay, but we never did as well as the averages. And the reason for that was, you know, when I learned in the business, you know, stocks and up and stock, it wasn't like there was no political influence. There always kind of was. But you never really had, people were so afraid of the inflation of the 70s and 80s, make that late 60s, 70s and 80s, that you never thought we were going to go back that way again. I mean, when you had a year where the money supply was up 5% and the market was up, you know, 10% or something crazy, 15%, which used to be crazy, you know, with doubles, it's okay. Your thought was that'll never happen again, and you either covered your stuff or maybe even got short, because nobody would let that happen. But in effect, we not only have, but it feels so good. It's like your 15th beer. Go out and get another case. I don't see it ever stopping, really, from really anybody, and clearly from this group in office, because they love it. And you've got a guy who's in charge of owns stuff and is doing business out of there. I mean, you know, whatever. It's not a politi- It's the fact, Jack. And inflation is spectacularly good for his businesses. And so I don't think, I can't see him being the guy to turn off the spigot. So seeing that what's happening now, I'm trying not to have any calls out there above the market, although we did get caught a little bit in silver here, because silver was kind of a laggard. Now it's going up every day. I mean, when was the last time silver was up 80 cents 2 days in a row? I don't think ever. And don't worry, we've got some 42 and a halfs. I think we're shorter to 42 something. We'll have to roll today and scramble a little bit. But, I mean, now you sit there and go, okay, where does this end? I mean, how long can it go like this? Might go a while. But you look around, Jan, and I don't know how much you've been out, because I know you kind of hang in a little bit. Everything that you even remotely want to buy is up dramatically over just in the last 6 months. I mean, just look at any kind of outside entertainment, every place you want to go buy coffee, every place you want to go. I mean, everything is just up that 10-15%, and you don't really notice it when something's 250 and the next week it's 280. I mean, it's under $3. What's the big deal? Well, it is a big deal, like kind of across the board everywhere. And I don't know what the backlash is going to be. People are going to blame stuff on or whatever. But it's not just the administration. Anybody who has wealth now wants it to keep going. Anybody who buys baseball teams, football teams, and yet there's every day it seems like somebody else is being left in the fray, right? And I don't know what. I can't write the end game here. What do you think the end game is, or is there an end game?
You know, what wealth building used to involve, say, 40 years ago, Tom, and you know this better than I do, there were certain things that you could rely on, that, you know, the real estate values, you know, your home, investment properties, were expected to continue to rise in value, and, you know, almost predictably. I mean, there's nothing too surprising. And, you know, looking back and the historical increases.
How far back are you looking?
I say 40 years. You know, by that I mean you weren't worried about that being, you know, something that could be put aside, and you had to plan for retirement on going into the stock market heavily. You always felt you had some kind of, you know, asset that, you know, would back you up. You know, so you didn't have to live a risky investment life, because there were certain things you could expect it to be growing, and not astronomically. And, you know, this is not as true all across the country as it was in some places. But now, I just, and I'd like your thoughts on this too. How do you make money in real estate? You know, either as a small-time investor, as a homeowner, or as a commercial developer, how does that fit into a portfolio when the market is so unstable and unpredictable? And does that, you know, that's, I think, what is driving, you know, the rise in the stock market, because that's the only way to shore up, you know, your future against oblivion.
So you for the last 15 years, it really has been since the 2000 crash. We had a little bit of a blip in 2007, 2008, but really, if you bought any of the major, well, not any, because a couple of them went out of business, but Even the stuff like Oracle, which was a huge... The only one that's probably still a massive Cisco is the same price as it was in 2000. But here's the thing, Jack. If you do... I mean, I don't want to get into some huge math thing, but we're sort of out of whack and have been for a while. When you mentioned housing prices, well, if somebody... Let's go back to our parents' day, you know, quite a long time ago. You made money by making $80 a week and living on 60 and putting 20 in the bank. That's how you built wealth. And it was a long, long time ago where people could actually make more. Regular people could make more than they actually needed to live. Not a hell of a lot more, but some. I mean, I have my aunt was a bookkeeper and my uncle was stripped wire for Western Electric. They put 15% of their paychecks in the bank every month. Still gambling every Saturday at the racetrack and everything. So, I mean, you were able to do that. And now, if you were to go back and say, what should get, how do people make money? Well, if you got a terrific buy on an apartment building or something, or you were a handy person and you put, you know, 1,000 hours of your own time in the place and didn't count it, you know, and actually said, well, I bought it here, and by the way, I fixed it up a little bit, and now it's here. Well, if you don't count the fix-up, you have to count everything if you're going to actually, you know, do this properly. And there were people in New York. I mean, my friend Robin, again, who died tragically, he's been on the show a lot. I met a lot of her parents' friends when we were boyfriend, girlfriend. And they were New York renters for like 40 years, John. And when you say, when you bought into real estate, you never really lost. Well, there were times you could lose, but you never really lost. But here's the thing: there's a risk-free return, which we don't. I mean, people don't know this stuff anymore. The risk-free return is what people should get just for putting money someplace. It's usually defined as what you can get, like in T-bills or something. So say that's 3%. Now there's a little more risk in apartment building, and a little more. Now people don't count their management stuff. Now if you did, maybe you're not making as much money. Anyway, so for an apartment building to return 6% is not out of line, 7 or 8, because there's effort involved there. It's not as risk free as T-bills. Now the question is, why should a renter? Suppose you and I, you know, we're buds. We got a room, a apartment out of college together, and all of a sudden we say, well, it looked like either one of us are getting married for a while, like a while. And why don't we buy a house? Okay, so we buy the house. Or buy the apartment building, and we take one apartment, or I take one, you take the other, and we rent to it. Those kinds of things. There should be kind of a return there, but the renter, if the renter may say, hey, look, instead of putting my money into a house, I've got this business, and I can make 10% in the business, I think, so I'm going to rent. Okay, and put my capital into the business. And if he has a good idea or whatever, he can make more there maybe than in the apartment building. So it's okay for him. But my point is, if you rented for 30 or 40 years in an economy that's in equilibrium, which ours has not been for a long time, you should not be a stone-cold loser versus the owner of the building.
Right.
But you are over the last 25 years. You absolutely are. I mean, your rents are probably triple or quadruple, and your salary is not. And yet, and the building probably has gone up that much if it's in a decent spot. If not, if it's in a horrible neighborhood, well, you're screwed. But there shouldn't be that kind of an unusual return versus owners versus people who rent. The owner shouldn't be making 10% because the owner really isn't making 10%. What's happening is the value of the dollar is going down, so any asset's going up. That's the part that everybody misses, and you absolutely can't explain to people. They have no, they're like me in my first international economics class when everybody's from Europe and they knew what was going on and I didn't. I felt like the dumbest man on earth because I never came across that before. What are you talking about? It's a dollar. It's in my pocket. I'm from Chicago. Duh. You know, but that's not the way it works. It's now the person who put his money in the bank, say, at 1.5%. I mean, how many people do you know? You probably, if you really thought about it, I bet we got buddies from school. If they put $1 million in the bank 6 years ago at 1.5%, or God knows, whatever the banks are paying, I'm going to say that $1 million right now is worth $550.
Yeah.
And they have no idea that's what happened to them. It has nothing to do with the house going double. It's the dollar going half. Or maybe not half. It's probably down a third. And I don't know. And until enough of the population gets that, or gets inflation numbers that aren't lies through every administration, somehow or other we believe this crap, and we think it's okay, even though right in front of our eyes we see what's actually happening, right? I mean, duh, right? I mean, for God's sake, what is it? If you can find a doctor, what's a hospital visit now compared to 10 years ago? Triple? I mean, what are we even talking about?
If your wealth was focused on your real estate portfolio, and it wouldn't have to be a big portfolio if you're a small-time investor or you just had your house, you know, I think you can pretty much discount any kind of, you know, growth, say over the last 10 years and looking forward to the next 10 years too. The you know, numbers we see about median house sales, I think are just the most ludicrous, completely.
Well, they're not ludicrous if you're looking for a place to live.
But they're deceptive, yeah, in that they reflect prices of home sales. And what's selling is hardly, you know, spread across the board, so that houses of every price category and neighborhood and demographic are selling at an equal rate. By no means. It's the high-end stuff that sells. It's the people who are buying houses like that, that don't have to worry about high interest rates, don't have to worry about hidden expenses. I mean, they're coming out of a house sale maybe where they got cash to throw around and they can buy a cheaper house and still live pretty lavishly. But that is not how the real estate market looks to me at all. So if you are, you know, living in a bungalow in a not so nice neighborhood in a blue city, you know, what kind of growth are you looking at?
Careful with that. Our friend Jimmy here is looking for an apartment, right? So, of course, to give him a bunch of grief, I go some price some of the apartments in Inglewood. John, they're not cheap. Audrey has sold bungalows in the city in areas maybe you wouldn't want to move in, or maybe, you know, but they're decent. Just, you know, there's some crime, that whatever, but John, lower threes is not unusual. Mid threes if it's nice. They're not 150. Don't even think that.
Well, and places that are selling in neighborhoods like that are, you know, not reflective of the entire housing market in those neighborhoods. If you look on Zillow and just start sampling properties in neighborhoods across the board, I think some of them are way too high. I think some of them are maybe...
Well, they're all too high. I mean, but what do you think of a decent bungalow in Mount Greenwood costs? It's in the threes.
Oh yeah, but those, you know, that's way below the, or, you know, at the low end of median house sale.
Well, median house are 408. I mean, we're talking about this is just a bungalow like you and I grew up in. I mean, they're the same house, for God's sake.
Well, consider the top end of the numbers that are driving those median home sales.
Well, median should be median. Should be the house in the middle, not the mean.
Right.
By the way, are you sneakily building, either you or Jimmy, that place on 123rd and Wolf Road? Some guy, I don't know if it's a sports, I can't imagine who it is. I mean, it's an area with some very nice homes. Somehow or another, this guy buys this place, and I don't know how many rooms. You go by there, and you're just, wherever we go by, I have to slow down so Audrey can look at the place. The guy had some kind of a pond in there, the pond would be good for you. Expanded the hell out of the pond, so it's like a lake. And he's got a dock on the thing. Not to mention, he's got some massive pool above that. This place has to be, it looks like, I think it's bigger than the Clampett's home in Beverly Hills. And it's got this huge driveway with the closing gate, but he also has a house for a gatekeeper, like if it's a whole community of, like, you know, 50 people paying the guy's salary. Have you ever seen a gatehouse for one house before?
No.
You got to take a ride out there and see this place. It's unbelievable. The size of the stones they brought in to build the wall around where you pull in and pull out. God's sake, John, they look like the stones they built the pyramids with, for God's sake. I mean, what kind of a crane is you need to move the damn things? I mean, I can't even imagine what this place cost.
I mean, is that Payless Park, or is that where?
I think it's Orland. Where's 123rd and Wolf Road? Is it Orland? I'm not sure. What's south of Orland? I don't even know. I mean, north of Orland. And the same on Wolf Road.
Yeah, I have to look at a map.
The lottery will know. She'll be on later. But I keep watching this. I keep trying to keep my eyes on the road. And I'm going, wait a minute. They can't be a gatehouse. Well, maybe they're not going to have a gate. Now they got a gate and a gatehouse. I can't even imagine doing something like that. I mean, what? For God's sake, you could have 15 relatives in the place and never see them. Maybe that's the goal. I don't know. Anyway.
Well, I guess, you know, to the extent a house like that can sell.
Oh, you got it. You got it. Well, Audrey's had a few homes that she's sold for way under the value, where you know, somebody puts in, you can easily put in a $100,000 to $150,000 kitchen now. You're not gonna get that money back if the house is, you know, it's a $600,000 house. I mean, you can over improve, but at least you have to tell yourself, I'm doing this for myself. I'm not doing this for resale. I mean, you have to say self on that one. What do you think in terms of what do you think the return has been in the last 15 years to like these strip malls? They can't be that good, are they? I guess there's some location, but most of them have a vacancy or two.
Yeah, but you know, I've noticed, just this is anecdotally speaking, I've noticed those, you know, vacancies turn around with some regularity, so that I haven't seen a fully empty strip mall around me in a long time.
Well, fully empty is pretty bad.
They were kind of, you know, where they had experienced difficulty at the beginning, you know, where they had trouble with construction, or you know, the developer was, you know, in shaky ground, and they couldn't, you know, get people to buy, to, you know, sign leases. But the thing I noticed about ones in the city, anyway, is that they do better than storefront properties in brand new, you know, condo buildings.
It's because of the parking.
Parking, right? Exactly.
Well, the parking meters buried Armitage.
Well, it's a killer. Everywhere I investigate where I have to park, and you know, for whatever reason, I'm always, you know, really bummed out by what I have to pay for just short-term parking. And of course, the more valuable the space is, you know, it's flexible pricing, let us say. They don't have to worry about that.
What do you figure, one of my favorite places to stop and have a meet people, matter of fact, to meet some of the nicest people, is Club Lago. And now with the parking in front, I don't feel like paying $11 to go in and have a glass of wine. Right. And I just don't. I mean, what do you suppose, even a, I won't say a crummy little place, because it's not crummy at all, the Tripoli's in a neighborhood now, you used to be able to park on Armitage for nothing. And if you wandered in, and once in a while I meet some people early, and you'd see, it's a bar where every different age group is in there. You know, it's like Cheers bar. Everybody knows everybody, and everybody's comfortable. If you're 20, you're comfortable. If you're 80, you're comfortable. But I'm going to say, if you wandered in there at 6 o'clock before, say the Cubs ran or something, you'd see two, three couples that were planning on going to dinner, and they'd pull up front, they'd come inside, they'd have a drink, watch an inning of the game, and then they'd head off to wherever their dinner was. Because probably the drinks at Tripoli are better and cheaper than wherever the hell they were going.
Yeah.
But now, you don't see any of that, because to park, even if it's $2, it's a pain in the ass. You know, you got to get your app out, your phone, go through the whole mess. You say, screw it. Why? I'll pay the extra $2 or $3, and we'll just have another drink at the place we're going or something. I mean, I got to believe it buries. Well, it stops me. I go to Lago probably once a month. I'd go there once a week if I didn't have to pay to park. I mean, on one hand, you think it's like, now we're going to make all this money from the casino. I mean, are these people that stupid? I mean, they're going to make all this money from the casino. Of course, the first year or two, their returns have been, what, half of what they thought they were? So now they're going to put video gaming in all the bars. What does that do to the casino? You just kill it or what? Might as well have.
I think it has been a zero-sum game for a while, so you're not attracting people into the, you know, casino mindset. So if they can do it, you know, with their corner bar or their liquor store or whatever, they're not going to go to the casino.
Yeah, I mean, you want to play craps or blackjack? Yeah, but I think a lot of people like the video stuff. It's mind numbing. You know, you don't have to count. If you make a stupid play in blackjack, nobody sees you.
Game phenomenon. This is familiar ground for people now in ways you and I maybe I can't visualize. But the extent to which people are glued to their games, you know, it's one thing if you're going through email on your phone, sitting on a bus or something. But if you're just gaming, if you're you know blasting noises into your head with the earbuds, and you know defeating some you know nemesis on the screen, well, this is exactly what you know video poker plays into. To me, this is like the next you know level game in a way for people once they reach a certain age. So. Why wouldn't those places be
better? Why don't, you know, without getting any kind of politics one way or the other, the thing it seems like probably all of us can agree on, even if we have different politics, is a lot of people are taking advantage of the dumbing down of the population. I mean, I don't know if it was ever all that smart, but, I mean, how is it that when they say we're going to have video gaming in your local bar, it seemingly 80% of the people say, great, I get to play video poker. And, you know, okay, fine. I mean, I enjoy playing video poker, too, usually in Vegas, but not, I haven't been there in a long time. But don't you get it that it is nothing but a tax? The tax is, the state can say, we're going to make 70, 80% of all the money that's bet on that stuff, maybe more. And collectively, it's a tax. I mean, just like everybody who bets on sports thinks they're going to win. Every male who's 40 years old or 35 or 30 with a little extra testosterone figures he's smarter than the next guy, right? But the governor, whoever the governor happens to be, looks at it as a tax. You idiots, you're giving me more money. So why don't people get that? I mean, I don't. In some areas of sport, I think, John, or some areas of gambling, because I used to gamble all the time. I loved it. That's all my family did all day long, for God's sake. You can hold your own, possibly, come out to the plus in blackjack. But you got to be really, really good. But you can be good enough to not get your ass kicked, basically. The only sport, I think, in the casinos that you can win at is poker, because they don't care who wins. You're beating other people, not the establishment. They're taking their little vig, so you got to be that much better. I think it actually was possible in horse racing, because again, they only took 15%, and it's a pari-mutuel system. You got to beat the other idiots, and I was always one of the other idiots. If I went, you know, I'd bet, you know, whatever, $10 on every race, nothing crazy. But if you really got into it, and you had discipline enough to be following a few horses and knew the horse that would go from 6 furlongs to 7 furlongs actually maybe could be the winner. Not saying you're winning all the time. But if you had the discipline to just go to the track and bet like 2 races because you've been, you know, you could, I think, beat, and I would never want to through the time of doing this, you could possibly beat the other idiots that were betting. So because that's who you were betting against. You weren't really betting against the government. You were betting against the other people. Those are probably the only 2 spots. Everybody thinks they can win on sports, right? Everybody thinks that. Every male that's ever you know played tiddlywinks thinks he knows everything about sports and can bet on sports. I don't know about that. I know one group way back in the day at the Tripoli, and the guys are so old now, people are in nursing homes. I think they used to win. And their shtick was, and Jimmy, you'll like this. I don't know if you remember any of these guys. Another Murphy, the elder Murphy. They had a group here and in Vegas where they somehow would become privy to injury reports on these college teams. Which colleges, if you don't know, in pros, if somebody's hurt, you better let everybody know or you can get fined because they're so aware of the gambling. Colleges, not so much. I don't think there's an official injury report in college. There might be something the coach, if you ask him, you know, what about Lawler? He's, you know, his knee's bugging him, he can't play this week. You don't ask him, I don't know if they even tell you. So what these guys would do is they very seldom bet on the games. But if the injury report was that you know, some team had a terrific defense, and all of a sudden four guys in the defense weren't playing that week, they would take the over type of thing. And over a period of years, I think they were positive. Now, whether it was enough for all their effort, probably not. But for them, for ego-wise, for them to be able to say, you know, we bet 90 bazillion games last year, and guess what, we're up on the year, that was really important to them. And they put in a lot of work. And if they said they wanted, you know, the over in the Oregon-Penn State game, because they found out that four defensive people were hurt or something, they would have guys go place the place in Vegas, and they would get the they wouldn't go to the local saloon. They would actually plunk them down in Vegas, and they'd get the over that was 40 instead of 41, or instead of 40 and a half, they'd get the cheapest one. So they had a little bit of a network. I mean, there was a method to it. Now, if they really were in the Plaza or not, or that was just bar talk, who knows? But they did it year after year. So, I mean, there are ways where you can, you're not really nipping the system, you're nipping the other people, right? But it's very rare. It's very rare.
Well, and it's all a regressive tax, you know.
Oh, sure it is.
So, and but you, now you've got, you know, the state, which is, you know, the house on these video games, and they're taking advantage of the hunger of, you know, the residents of that state at the
right.
lowest, you know, the most desperate side of the socioeconomic level, and you know, what does that do to those people's wealth growth? I mean, if there's, how are they going to put aside $20 out of a paycheck?
Jan, walk
they're
into
already, they're already in the hole by gambling.
So. Walk into three or four places, one here on Van Buren's kind of like that. These scratch off games. Now, I think if you went online, you could find out how many winners are left in there. That's what Carl tells me you can do now. Way back in the day, you couldn't do that, but now I think you can. The biggest scratch off went from 35 to 50 last time I looked. $50. And if you walk in there, you're going to find most of the time the person buying it, I'd give you odds that they can't calculate the odds. I'll give you odds that they can't.
Yeah, I'll take.
But you know,
I'm sure they can.
You know what the economic definition of that is? Is a lot of people's risk reward curve is skewed to the right. You know what that means?
Explain.
It means if you and I bet a football game, okay, we're going to bet it 1-1, especially if there's some points, right? And if you bet a game, you really want to get odds of 50-50, right? Because it's one game. But when you start getting to a situation where, like for instance, the lottery, if you put your $2 down in the lottery, and the winning was $500. And you found out that they took 40% of the money, you'd say, "Eh, I'm not doing that. Why would I do something like that?" But now, if the prize is $5 million, and now it's a life changing experience. It's take this job and shove it, take this house and sell it. I mean, and by the way, get rid of this old jalopy and get me a new truck.
Get rid of the spouse. Get another one.
Boy, yeah, remember the Royko article?
Yeah.
Okay. So for those that don't know, Jimmy, you're too young, but Royko writes this article, and he goes, "I'm so tired about people winning this lottery," and then it was like $1 million, right? This is back in the 70s. And he goes, "I'm so tired of people saying they won the lottery, they got $1 million, and maybe they'll take their wife for a weekend to Blue Island and pay off the old Chevy and go back to work the next day." I got this friend, Phil T. Slop. Remember, there was a guy who was always his... Phil, he was like his... what's that when you... Who's the guy, like, you always use the same guy as the, not the protagonist, but you know what I'm talking about.
Well, it was Slats Grop, Nick Royko, these made up people that were just
tits. So he tells Phil T. Slab, he goes, "I told the wife to pack bags for a trip around the world." She starts packing bags. They go, "No, not your bags. You're not going." Then he walked into the, what's your favorite saloon, Jimmy? Walked into his favorite bar, bought the whole round of drink, and said, "It's the last time I have a drink in a junky joint like this," and walked out the door. But anyway, he didn't think it was, you know, if it's a life-changing event, people don't mind that they only pay 70 cents on the dollar or 80, because there's a chance for them getting it out of whatever monetary misery they put themselves in.
Yeah, they think they're dreaming big. They got the right to do that.
But, you know, it kind of works, and they did a... Boy, I wish I kept some of this stuff. This has got to be 30 years ago. They went around and they interviewed, surveyed, and it was not just your survey. Surveys I see now, if I couldn't ask the question in such a way to get the result the way I wanted it, I think I should go back to second grade. It's so easy to do. You go around, and I'll say, "What if you have a survey that if should all people run around naked be forced to put some clothes on or something? However you write the thing. How about this? What if a bunch of fat people ran around naked? Should they at least have to put clothes or something?" You're going to get the answer you want, right? Anyway, this survey was a pretty serious survey of about 8 different income groups. People that were on the low end, the middle, the middle high, that kind of thing. And they said, okay, now listen, how much, if you won something, what would it take for you to take care of the credit card bills, maybe pay off the car or something, back when cars were cheaper, what would it take to get you comfortable, maybe a weekend away or something? In virtually every economic stratus, it came out to be 20 or 25% of 1 year's salary. That just about everybody was stretched to that amount. If you're making 200 grand a year, probably your credit card is 10 or 15, you owe something on the car, and you'd like to take a 4 grand vacation. So if somebody gave you a check for 40 grand, you'd be okay. You wouldn't be stretched. You'd get rid of the car payment, be easier to pay the next tuition, and get rid of the credit card bill. And if you made 20 grand a year, the number was 4. But everybody is that far out on the limit. This is a long time ago. I wonder if you did all that again, first if you get the right, if you get anybody to give you honest answers. I wonder if it would be like that again. I bet it would.
I bet it would, too.
Because don't think for a second that a couple that makes between the two of them $250,000 a year, that has a house in the burbs and 2 cars for them, and of course the kids need a car to go to college or to go to high school, and you've got, you're paying for clothes for people and everything. Don't think for a second, with the taxes and everything on the house, that they're not stretched. Even though you'd say, wait a minute, they got $250,000, why are they stretched? They are. Because their expenses and their taxes and stuff have to be up 15% in the last 3 years, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Easy.
And I bet their salaries are not. Now, the mortgage should get less, assuming you get any kind of a raise, right? The mortgage should get less. But these are things that are sort of happening in our society. Why do you think, John, there are so many people that don't seem to have anything to do? Not that they're running around killing people, but they're watching whatever side of the aisle stuff all day long. It's like people say to me, "This guy's on some soap opera." I'm getting up there. I've never once watched a soap opera. They're on during the day. I've always worked. How the hell could I watch a soap opera? There's never a day I didn't work.
To earn a living by making things, you got to kind of be in a factory or a place, not home. I'm not trying to mingle your work and your home lifestyles, but you got to focus, and you have to have something that you made and that works and is saleable at the end of the day. And that model, I think, is antique now. I mean, what this country doesn't make stuff. It doesn't make it here if it makes it. But it's not the sort of thing that you can, have a career doing, because at the first opportunity, this plant will go somewhere else where labor is cheaper and costs are less, and you're left hanging out there with the skill that you may or may not find somebody who needs, to hire you again. So you kind of bum around. You spend probably most of your time looking for a job that you think you're eminently qualified for, but nobody needs that labor anymore. So it's kind of, this is the price of having, a service economy, which was touted, in Chicago's case, 30 years ago. This is the future of the local economy. No, we don't have factories anymore, but we can survive on a service economy. Well, can you? I mean, what does that even mean anymore?
Yeah, I don't even. I mean, a service economy means there's somebody making something, and you're the place who serves breakfast to the guys that are making something. I mean, I'm a little surprised, Jen, as this thing piles through, this guy who appears, I got to use the word allegedly, but it looks like, from what everybody's point of view that this guy who shot Charlie Kirk seems like he shot Charlie Kirk. I mean, I'm kind of surprised that he went to school and didn't do so hot there, but he appeared to, from what I'm, you know, I don't know the guy from Adam, but it appeared since he was going to this electrical school, learn how to be, it was an electrical engineer or electrician or something, that he actually was doing something and had kind of righted himself a little bit. I'm kind of surprised that he wasn't just sitting at home in the basement. He actually was doing something. And does that surprise you at all? I mean, I'm not saying he's not guilty. I think he is.
Yeah, I wish I knew more about, you know, how he was, you know, making ends meet, because he had this, you know, apartment not at home. It's not.
Oh, he was not. He was in an apartment. Okay, he was in an apartment with the guy.
But how anybody was footing the bill for this, and you know, who was contributing? You know, this came out in bits and dribbles. It was still coming out. It was not at all clear at the beginning where he was actually living, and it's, you know, 300 miles from where the shooting took place. So,
and from where the parents lived in Provo, right?
The parents live in St. George.
Okay.
And that's where he lives too, and that's the very southern end of the state. But
that's the part that, when you ever drive through there, boy, you're nowhere.
Yeah, it's spectacular, but it's, you know.
we stopped at a great lunch at a great Mexican place there, though. Just not that means anything, but it seemed like he was doing something, which is kind of surprised me. Usually these guys are doing nothing.
Yeah, and you know, the devil, idle mind is the devil's workshop. But you know, this whole idea of people being strapped on. Carl sent that piece around yesterday, talking about the, you know, the funding problems at the Obama Center down in Jackson Park, and you know, when you read into what's happened there, when the Obama signed the deal with the city of Chicago to get 20 acres of Jackson Park land for the building of this center, which is not a library, I mean, it's called that in a lot of the press, but it's not their library, so that's all going to be digitized. It's just going to be like some kind of celebration of his career, you know, with exhibits and a McDonald's and public library.
But you do get to access to of a lot of stuff that you don't have to go to the archives to get. You can get it at the library, right?
Well, you can get it at home too. I mean, this is, the idea was that it was all going to be digitized, and this is the wave now of a lot of library collections. You may have to, you know, pay a fee of some kind to be a user and have an account, but you can access it. And you know, the idea is not to have anything physical there, not even, you know, necessarily access points. You can have those wherever you want to be a subscriber. But the thing is, you know, I didn't think you could
access stuff from home, from like the National Archives. I thought the Presidential Libraries allowed you to do that on site, even if it was digitized. I didn't think you could.
Oh,
do
yeah, and I mean, there are still National Archives branches, like one down near Fort City, which, you know, you could save a trip to Washington D.C. to go to those archives and have access to microfilm and some. You know, I haven't been there in a number of years now.
It's not in Fort. Fort City's going down. I hope it's not in the place.
Right. No, this is a nice, you know, new thing. The NARA, San Cicero. Near Fort Worth,
okay.
Fort City, but it's but the idea is that, you know, you didn't have to pay anything to go there. It just saved you the trouble of having to go to, you know, the data source for hard copies of things, like, you know, usually microfilm, microfiche collections. But that's all changing now to digitized, and it's become searchable too. You know, this is how the census, you know, it does this partnership with Ancestry and other places where you can search all this with an Ancestry account, and there's no reason to go to a library anymore for any of this stuff. But you know, that's the way the Obamas pitched this, that this was not going to be a library as such, and I'm not sure why they cared.
Yeah, but if you never have to go there, what's the point?
Well, that's kind of my point, too. But the idea was in 2021, when they made this deal, that they would endow the center to the tune of $470 million, which is, I think, the idea was to show a sign of good faith for the giveaway.
Oh, you
of this
can build
public land.
That's a lot of dough.
Yeah, but you know, there's but
well, it used
1
to be
million,
anyway. It used to be
1 million of that contributed so far, and the reason is that it isn't bigger. Well, there's been a lot of reneging on pledges for, you know, contributions to this endowment, and I. You know, I think maybe the gloss on Obama has faded somewhat too. I think it really has. It's way behind schedule. The cost overruns is now pushing $1 billion, and it was supposed to come in at $350 million or something. So this is another sign of how people, even at the high end, are not able to just fork over money willy-nilly. Even if at one point it looked like they could, and they signed a pledge to do it, but those pledges have never materialized enough to have an endowment in this place. So where's the operating money going to come from, should this thing ever open? And I suspect it'll be, you know, the taxpayers sitting on a substantially smaller Jackson Park with a building that can't be finished, that nobody would go into anyway, and yet it's still, you know, having to be paid for. So I find this kind of like a horrible, you know, glaring example of how stretched people are, not just at the low end, but at the high end too. And especially when it comes to vanity projects like this, you know, if you got money to plow into something, does the Obama Center look like a winning investment? I don't think it does.
Yeah, I don't see how any of this stuff is gonna work. I really don't.
No, it was supposed to be this magnet for, you know, business and, you know, entertainment in that, you know, corner of the city, and it's turned out to be, you know, a drag for the people living nearby. We have to look at this thing all the time. And, you know,
name me a sports stadium that was a good idea.
It's in that same, you know, model. I would lump all these things together as oversold, you know, underthought projects that, you know, in the long run end up just sucking money out of, you know, the taxpayers' pockets. And who's getting the benefit of it? I mean, is this...
Well, I'll tell you who's getting the benefit. I mean, you know. I mean, if neither one of us want to see the state give any money to the Bears. I don't. But I'll tell you what, I'd love the security contract. I'd love the hot dog stand. I like the beer stand. I mean, a lot of people make a lot of money in those places.
If you know the right people.
I mean, the Presidential Towers has been a disaster from day one for any of the owners, right? Dr. J's dad was one of the original owners. He got Butkus back. But I'm going to say, if you and I have had the garbage contract, the telephone, the cable contract, I think we've done fine for 30 years, haven't we?
Right, but the only way you get those kind of deals is by knowing somebody. And it isn't like there's any open bidding for any of that stuff, I don't think.
Well, allegedly, Reinsdorf's kids are... Why do you think the guy wants a new stadium? Reinsdorf's kids, from what I understand, are...
He's got more family members now.
Well, but he, you know, I'm not saying the kids aren't deserving. I mean, I think they know a lot about stadium construction, but one of my buddies from Mexico tells me that there really hasn't been a sports stadium anywhere that's been built in the last 30 years that there's not some input of some kind. Or, you know, there's a, you know, the security contract, the camera contract, the God knows what else, maintaining the bathroom contract, something or other, who's tied into, you know, these people that, quote, help out. I mean, that's where the... I mean, I don't know if I told you, I've been on here a few times, I had a potential client came in, and he was kind of a connected guy, and that's when John and I were on the score. He ended up not opening an account, but he came in and he says, well, you know, I think you've got a little few political connections. And I go, you know, very few. He goes, well, you got enough. He says, why don't you bag this managing money business and get yourself, like, the contract to do the laundry at the jail or serve lunches at the jail. You'll be at the country club the rest of your life playing golf. I mean, it's, you know, that's the deal. I mean, and in these places, these public buildings are the same thing. I mean, who do you think gets a security piece?
Oh, yeah, for every public construction project, in entertainment or sports or whatever, there's a lot of private entities that, you know, were first in line and, you know, never will have a worry about meeting payroll or, you know, living off of the income or anything else. They were well positioned, and they knew that before they, you know, the thing was finished. But the taxpayer doesn't have any say in that. Certainly, all they do is pay for it.
But it's not even just the when the original. Now there's one on every corner. I don't know what the rules even are, but when the original marijuana places, were put up, the amount of rules that those people had to have, and one of them was like 24-hour security. You know, and I'm going to say there's two or three people, groups, one of which were off-duty guys from the sheriff's office, were seriously competing for that job. And this guy's marijuana joint. You'd have a guy there 24 hours. Even when it was closed, no matter what the guy did, slept or whatever, I don't know. But, and so, the, you know, imagine the political points you got from hiring the group that are all sheriff's deputies. You know, what your Bennies were. We actually went to the sheriff. We went to some golf outing with all those guys, and I mean it's. But you know, if it's open pricing and stuff, yeah, you know, I really don't care. I mean, if the deal is, you know, $500 a day and they're competitive, you know, and you like hanging around with sheriff's guys, you know, that's okay. But if it's $1,000 a day and everybody else is $500, and if you don't get it, you know, you get shut down, well, then I got a problem. I mean, I think you do the same way.
And by being a part of that select group, Tom, you're already sitting at the table of a lot of other select groups, too.
Yeah.
This is not something that it freezes out ever more people who could be qualified, you know, have the money to you know, commit to a contract for security or, you know, concessions or something else. But they're beaten from the start.
And when was the last time, like, a guy like me had a guy like you or Lawler or even Matt Byrne say, hey, I got two $500 tickets to this big shindig for this politician. Why don't you be my wingman? When's the last time you guys did that to me? Make that a $1,000 ticket. If I'm going to get a suit on, I got to get more than that.
Oh, yeah.
because you know, that's the deal. I actually went to one of those. Yeah, I was just scared. How about a stupid story? I know we'll bring a lot on. Was the same marijuana guy, right? So they finally find a spot. Of course, every alderman fought tooth and nail where they didn't want the marijuana facility in their ward, even though it was awarded to that ward, right?
Right.
And one of the lady aldermen who was dead set against it, her husband was in the state senate and was one of the co-sponsors of the bill in the first place. But she didn't want it in her ward. Anyway, so we end up with he ends up with another alderman, and we got to go to this shindig. Of course, it's snowing to beat the band. I got my Suburban with the four-wheel drive. We get there. It's on West Lake Street somewhere. We pile in, and there's this little roped-off area where all these people, there's a couple of pizzas, and you got a couple of drinks. You got to pay for your own drinks, I think. There's a bunch of people standing there. Everybody came basically kiss the mistletoe and give a check. So, okay, well, then everybody gives a check. It's like $500 or something. But the weird part, first of all, I shake hands with the alderman. I forgot the guy's name, so I can't even say it if I wanted to. It was one of those where you really had to resist, like, wiping your hand off on your pants after you shook hands with the guy, one of those kind of deals. Just kind of a slimy sort of thing. And then the weird part was you had to write the check out to an alderman in L.A. And he's there. So, of course, he and I start BSing. He's alderman near where the port is. So we're sitting there talking about the ports and the cranes and the people and stuff, and he's looking at me like, how do you know something about this stuff? I said, well, you know, they had a bunch of cranes at Pullman. I know something about cranes. So we're BSing. I'm writing a check out to him. So he must have a deal out there where he brings this guy out there, and they write the check out to this guy. So it looks like the guy in L.A. has, you know, 25... guys from Chicago writing him a check for $500, like he even knew who the hell the guy was. To this day, I don't know the guy's name. I suppose if I look back on my checks, I'd find it.
Too late to stop payment.
Yeah, too late to stop payment. I'm like, this is a bizarre world. But this is, you know, I don't, this, that's petty stuff. It's not the
but,
same.
You know, it's big stuff when you stop and think about it. That tells you the number of middle people who are really, you know, calling the shots and directing, you know, where money goes, you know, how it gets apportioned out, what it's paying for before it gets to the final destination. And it's quite complex. And, you know.
But some of this stuff is, these are people who legitimately, you know, put up, I think, Jimmy, was it 25 grand for the original applications, or was it 50? Non-refundable. For the original marijuana places, for, was it just medical?
I think it was.
Was it 40 or 50? Might have been. I don't
50.
Think it was 25. Think it was 50. It was either 40 or 50. It was more than 25. You're right. It might be 50, but it definitely was more than 25. And so the funny part, John, boy, this is I'm walking down the plank here. But then they said, well, wait a minute, none of these went to minorities. So
no.
So the person we knew. Still no. Offers to do the work for a couple minority applications. Group of people get together. all get in a room. They're all going to go down this road. He does have to work. And he goes, okay, we need the 50 grand. And they go, what do you mean? He goes, well, that's the price of the application. Well, we just want one. We don't, well, no, no, no. You got to apply. You got to buy the ticket. Neither one of the groups went forward. How scary is that?
What percentage do you think those, you know, $25,000 or $50,000 checks destined for lobbyists, lobbying efforts?
No, this was actually had a, you had a, with your application to the state, you needed the check.
Oh, yeah, but as part of that, I got to believe that it's the lobbying effort that will keep those industries, you know, chugging along.
Well, yeah, but I'm talking about the initial ones. Now, since then, it's going to degrade it to where everybody or his brother seems to have one someplace. But there actually were some, in the first go-around, where people lost their dough, John. Say you and I ponied up 50 grand for the downtown, for instance. I don't think there was one downtown. I would say there was. And there's only going to be one downtown, and there were three applications. Two people lost their 50. Yet, nobody applied for Kankakee. They didn't get one. So if we would have applied there instead of downtown, we'd have got one. Right. But they wouldn't tell you who was applying where.
Yeah, I mean, the investor lost it, but somebody got it.
Well, no. Well, it went to the state.
I'd say it went to the lobbying firm.
Well, I think he wrote it out to the state.
Maybe went to the state and back to the lobbyists.
I don't know about that. They're crooked.
This is how lobbyists work. I mean, they're taking money under whatever, you know, guidelines they
have. I think what you needed to write a separate check to the lobbyist to say, I'll get it done for you, and then when he didn't get it, you're out that dough, too, and the 50.
Yeah.
Hey, S&P Futures up 32, NASDAQ Futures up 160. You want to go right to Audrey? We already did Traffic Weather Sports.
Yeah, sure, why not? We got Audrey.
Audrey, you with us?
And she's still muted. She is in here, though.
Yes, I am.
All right, unmute thyself.
Yeah.
There you go. We can hear you now. How's good? Nice morning. How everything by you?
Everything is just fine. It's beautiful. One of the most beautiful Septembers I can remember.
Yeah,
for sure.
I agree, Audrey.
The
first September I can remember in, I don't know, maybe 20 years where I haven't had the heat running at least a couple days in September.
Yeah, you're almost in danger of the AC running, but...
I might need it today.
Yeah, well, you know, it's been cool at night. It's been getting down at night, though, to where it's okay. But
yeah. I'll take it. It's been absolutely beautiful. Yeah.
So what's going on in the real estate world? Well, we were talking about that house, the 123rd and Wolf, earlier. I didn't think they were going to have a gate and a gatehouse, but they do now. I saw it last night.
Hey, if you got a house that big, you need a gatehouse. Other people will be driving up the driveway to look at it.
The nerve of those people.
You get shot that way at a place like that.
How big, I was going to say, how big do you think that place is?
Oh, I would say... I would say maybe 15,000 to 20,000 square feet.
Whoa!
If you had to take a guess, with the huge, I was saying those stones look like you're putting the pyramids up. What do you think the total value of the deal is? 10 mil or more?
Oh, I bet it's more than that. They redug. There was a pond there. They redug the entire pond. They tore down the house that was there. I mean, they paid well over $1 billion for the old house and the lot. So just stonework, the entire landscaping, that lot was, I forgot how big that lot is, maybe between 1 and 2 acres, I'm guessing.
It's got to be more than that. I mean, it's a long, long drive in.
Yeah, it's not, it's right around 2 acres, I think.
So there's not much room behind it, is what you're saying.
It's got like an 8-car garage.
Well, then you got to go out and get 8 cars.
What I can see in my nosy factor of looking when I'm driving, it's massive. You know what? I'm sorry. In this day and age, I don't know if I want to flaunt my wealth that much by myself out in the open. I just don't trust the world anymore.
But he's got a gatehouse. Sure, he's got a guard.
There'll be a beautiful cabana house next to the beautiful lake they're creating. It's going to be a masterpiece, but wow. Though it is across from another very expensive subdivision where a lot of White Sox players live.
So let's say the guy puts $15 million in a thing. All of a sudden him and his wife don't like each other and they call upon you to sell it. Can you get $15 million back or not?
There's always a buyer for everything. You never know who. Depend what the price is. I would say that's gonna be a minimum amount, I bet. But it's interesting to watch because whoever is doing it appears from a distance to be doing an incredible job. It's gonna have an incredible amount of windows. So it looks beautiful. I wish them all the best with it. It's gonna be a magnificent estate is what it's going to be.
Well, James,
it's gonna look like something that should be in Oak Brook or up in Lake Forest, or it's just stunning.
Well, it looks to me Jan's kind of semi-retired. What do you think they're paying for the gatehouse and for the cabana boy?
If you have to worry about that, then it's not the house for you.
Well, I'm saying Jan can maybe grab one of those during the day.
There's a house next to it that's incredibly beautiful. That's a copy of Frank Lloyd Wright copy, and that traded hands last year, I think, for close to $2 million.
Well,
beautiful too. So
it's
not like it's a low rent district. It's an incredibly beautiful wooded private area. Very lovely.
Well, that's kind of the high end of the world. What's the rest of the world doing? Like, because you've got some people, you've got a few listings, and you got some people you're looking for places for. Audit always has, to her credit, Audit's selling a place in a real nice area, and she's got a family looking for a first time house on the other end, and manages to do well in all those groups. What's going on between the different groups, Audit? Which ones are easier to sell or buy?
My little senior lady, too, going. We're looking for her, too. So I've got a little bit of everything this month. So we've got a young family first home, and I've got my seniors, and then I have my other group. So it's got a little bit of this, a little bit of that, which is fun. I get to meet everybody, talk to everybody, and that's why it's a great profession. Everybody has a different story, and everybody's life is different.
For me to be, I don't know the real numbers, so there's no, I'm not talking out of school, but I'm going to say you've got $1.2 million property, you've got an $850 property, you've got probably a $350 property, and you got maybe entry level property, all going at the same time, right?
So far, yes.
Well, let's.
You could be my, I'll hire you to be my secretary. Keep it up.
Oh, God. Don't you have to know how to type to be a secretary? I'd be the world's worst. I'd be the world's worst secretary.
Yes, you would.
At least we agree on something.
Have to read your writing, and that was impossible on the trading floor.
I know. It was better. The trade checkers, they invited me to the bowling thing. They must have liked me.
It's because you had to bribe them so they would work on clearing the trades. They could learn to read your. Jed, his writing looked just like a wild chicken ran across the trading pad.
No Palmer method going on there.
Well, John, when you had to stand in with your elbows, you couldn't put your hands down because people were next to you so much, and you had to just keep scratching up high by your face. My writing was horrible to start with, but we made it. We made it through. So, Odd, what's up down mortgage things? What's once in a while, one week they'll say mortgage applications are up, and next week they're right back down again. Is anything really changing?
Yeah, a lot of people hopped down, and we got that little blip downwards. We had rates, from what I've seen floating around, were like 6.25%, which it was nice, blip down 6.125% to 6.375%. There was, they're hovering there. There was a slight blip upwards, but just a little bit stimulated a huge amount of refi action. So, another couple of rate cuts, and it'll also help loosen up inventory, put more homes on the market, which, will probably help prices a little bit too.
What do you
have a little more inventory out there? People would to be pried out of their homes at lower rates. If it's getting more realistic, you might see more people moving.
I noticed, maybe Jan can comment on this too. I noticed that through the years, I mean, I've known each other a long time, and the one thing that sort of changed because I never get involved in their business because all I do is mess it up. But I noticed just from kind of the phone calls and so forth, it's changed a little bit, and that people are, when they get in the house, it's not like they're lazy. Maybe they are, but they really don't have any money for any repairs. So the difference between, like, when I used to, some buy homes, and there weren't a lot of them, but when I'd remodel one, I'd pretty much walk through the thing, give somebody a bid and say, okay, I need a guy to come, inspect the place just to make sure the roof's not falling in or something like that. or there's something horrendous in a plumbing that I can't see through the walls. That was really about it. I mean, all the rest of the stuff, I didn't come back and say, oh, by the way, do you know your bathroom need to be painted? Well, I could say that when I saw it, right? So I would put that in my price. So my view of this world is different. But now I notice that even though you get a, quote, deal from somebody, this inspection is a big thing, because not only does people not want to do anything, they don't have the money to do anything. So and the cost of repairs, I mean, I've seen what I do at my place, and I've seen you do a remodeling in that house you had. But these cost of repairs, you can knock the price of the damn place down $20,000 easy. If you got a little radon, you got something wrong with the air conditioner or whatever. I mean, it can be a real big deal, this inspection, because this stuff is not cheap to do.
No, that's true, and it is. It's a big deal, and the problem is that if it's a nice house in a desirable area, they'll get pushed back from the sellers. Who are like, well, if you don't want it, I'll sell it to somebody else. So it doesn't always equate into an instant price reduction. A lot of times there's a lot of back and forth to make something work if there's an inspection. A lot more give and take on items, but it's not always just something that the sellers are going to roll over and accept.
Audrey, do you think
they don't have to?
Do you see a pattern in any kind of numbers of deals that fall through, or where offers are withdrawn because the inspection has created an impasse? Are you seeing deals stopped or failing?
It happens all the time. Knock on wood, I haven't had that happen to me lately. But if you go through a house with it as an agent and you point things out to people, as I like to do with my clients, here's a potential problem, pitfall, expense, you could get a feel whether you're going to be able to make it fly or not. And it depends, again, how willing both sides are to negotiate, because it can't be all one side. And you come back and say, wow, this whole roof has to go, and three people say this roof has to go, and the sellers are like, I think it's fine. Well, you're not going to get anywhere. So some people will walk if they're not either going to get the repair or the credit. It doesn't seem like it's changed much. Well, I'll take that back. I'm saying I've seen a few more houses come back on the market. I don't necessarily know the reason. They show up as like reactivated in our multiple listing service thing. But either people couldn't get financing, or the inspection didn't work out, or the attorneys couldn't agree on certain terms. But I would say I see probably in the last 4 months maybe 10-15% more of that happening than I did before. I think people are a little fussier now than they were during the feeding frenzy of the last 2 years.
Yeah, and probably sellers are fussy too. If they think there's an offer out there, they don't worry about being sentimentally attached to one who's putting all sorts of roadblocks in the way. So they'll not drop the price and feel that they're not losing anything.
Well, didn't you have the one guy who the air conditioner had like 5 years left on it, and the guy still wanted you to replace it? Yeah,
that didn't happen.
No.
I take it or we're moving on. And he's like, and sometimes people are just fishing. They're just trying to see what they get. But as it states clearly in the contract, you don't get something replaced just because it's old. And if it's functioning and performing its purpose, then if it's working and cooling to the appropriate temperature, nobody's buying you a new air conditioner.
Tell that to your girlfriend, Jen. She can't replace you just because you're old.
There's hope for us
only
all.
If you put it in the contract.
But it is a...
get it in writing.
I don't want to go down this plank too much, but in certain groups, shall we say, it seems becoming more of the thing where if you put something, especially a big building, because I one of my clients was doing something like this, and they had a courtyard building somewhere over on the east side, and they were listed a thing, and I'm going to say a million something. It's a while ago. Jan and Audrey, well, you know all about this. And all of a sudden, a group says, I'll take it. Well, do I get any? Is there any? I don't know how the hell I got in the middle of this because I'm not an agent and I didn't get any money. But I introduced somebody to an agent essentially, and anyway, they go, "Yeah, well, you gonna put any earnest money down?" Well, hell no. And of course, the next day was, I said, "Don't you even want to like look at it?" Well, then the next day, well, we drove by it. We don't like the porches. Make that $1.5 million like $1.4 million, and I'm going, uh-oh. There is a style that will meet your price, and then everything they see wrong, they want off, right? And it's, I don't know if it's for single-family houses yet, but it's for the multi. It's a style.
It's like any other business. There's always somebody trying to get something for nothing.
Yeah.
Just the way it is.
We talked with Nancy last week a lot about risk. How much, if there is some sort of a market turned down, which, you know, there may or may not be, and it doesn't look like, certainly not today there isn't, how much of a drop in prices could homes take without causing some sort of a problem, assuming there's not people laid off in the community? And I mean, these houses ran up to a median price of 408. I'm going to say if they went back down to 385, you're not killing anybody unless somebody bought it right at 408. I think there's probably 5, 10, 15% play without it causing any big problems. What do you think that number? I mean, it's probably not 30. I mean, if they drop 100, you got a lot of people in trouble.
I don't see it happening. I think it's a moot point. I just don't see it happening. You're obsessed with this whole concept of houses going down. And I just don't really see it happening right now. I think we're bumping along. The Midwest is doing very well. You'll see. You know, Florida, Texas, I think California, Arizona had some downturns, I believe. Some places on the East Coast. The Midwest and some southern states have been doing very well.
Why do you think the Florida fiasco, which, you know, I think a lot of that's insurance related, and a lot of it has to do with how fast they ran up. Why do you think that seems to have spread to Georgia and Texas, and why do you think it would end there? I mean, I hope it does, but I mean, why do you... I would never put two and two together if they had prices going down in Florida because of natural issues and insurance. Why that possibly would have spread to Georgia and Texas? I wouldn't guess that in a second. Why do you suppose that even happened?
I don't know. It's not a market I really track or watch a whole bunch of things. You know, there's always, I don't know enough about the infrastructure of the streets of those states to comment on it, but. I think things are going along fine. I think they're going to get better, and I think this economy is going to be humming along. So I'm not particularly worried about the future right now.
Future so bright, you got to wear shades.
Yeah, pretty much.
John, what do you think? That's in any business, you have to sort of, you know, assess risk, and if you buy a home for 408, which is high compared to the last 3 years, and you put $20,000 down. I hope you don't lose it. I hope you don't ever have that problem, and I hope things stay okay. I mean, I don't think anybody wants me to think that, but I think in your mind, you at least have to say, "Gee, a year ago, the house was 380, and now it's 408, and I'm just putting down 20." So if this thing goes down 5%. To where it was a year ago or a year and a half ago, my 20's toast. I'm not saying you should.
It doesn't matter. You need to live there. You have to.
I understand that.
Live.
But my point is, matter. I'm not saying you should not buy the place.
It's like riding out the stock market and its ups and downs. You dump the portfolio when you hit a recession or something. No, you're good in it for the long haul. It's the same thing with the house.
I think there's a big difference between somebody, and you know this, by the way, is at PTI, she's still got her Series 7 and all that stuff. If somebody buys Apple at 11 and it goes to, where the hell is Apple? And it goes to 255 and it goes down to 250 next week, you're not going to lose sleep over it, basically. You're in for the long haul. But if you bought 1,000 shares at 255 and you sent PTI a check for half of that, we don't really have anybody like that, but you could do that, and all of a sudden it's down 20%, it's a different game for you. all of a sudden...
Not if you had PTI protect your investment.
Well, that's the truth. But, I mean, if all of a sudden, you know, if you didn't, I don't know. I mean, we never have to do this, but is there anything worse than calling somebody up with a margin call on?
Well, the good thing about houses is they're still there. They don't disappear like stocks can. You still can live in it.
Well, that's the truth. That is the truth. I think you're probably pretty accurate in the issue. We didn't run up that much here, so I don't think we have as much. Why do you suppose we have so much trouble in Texas? I was reading some articles down there that even BlackRock has got places they paid $500,000 for that they can't sell at $400,000. Why do you suppose that is? Those guys are usually pretty smart in what they buy.
I saw something, too. I don't know if it was BlackRock or some other smaller investor, but in Sonoma County, California, that this bunch went in and bought up like 150 homes en masse, you know. And, you know, the market tanked. And, you know, as it has happened some us in California. And, you know, the developer, the owner, investor is belly up. And what it's done to housing values in the surrounding areas is just, you know, a nightmare. So this is the problem when you've got, you know, an investor that is, you know, sort of outvoting everybody else on the block because they've got the lion's share of the property. And you're kind of at their mercy depending on how they handle these investments. If they are asking too much money when they try to sell them, or they're not keeping them up, or, you know, it's not insuring them or whatever. You got kind of a ripple effect. Everybody around who's investing a drop in their values too, when this neighbor becomes tainted. So,
where's the Audrey and I know the trading floor. These guys I used to play golf with, and actually one of the guys traded for me when there's no more trading floor, and they started to remodel houses. And one, you know, they're good at it. So one of the guys they get one. And they were in some of the not the most desirable neighborhoods, Jen, and you know what I'm talking about, Audrey. And they bought one house, I think, for like $65,000 or something, and put 20 or 30 into it, plus a lot of sweat equity. And it turned out, it passed all the inspections, it was pretty nice, and I think they have some Section 8 or whatever, but all of a sudden they've got three or four houses that they use with their own capital or borrowed from somebody. And they get the house number 5, and they go to the bank and say, well, look, we've got... this how much we have in here. Here's the balance sheet of the corporation, and here's the appraisals of the houses. And by the way, we're getting rent every month. We're making money. We would like to borrow money for the next house. And they're like, that ain't happening. we want you know, you to sign over the mortgage of or a deed of your place just in case. They want all these guarantees, and they basically, after what was it, 3-4 houses odd, they just ran out of gas and couldn't do anything more yet. So how does, obviously BlackRock's got more money than God, but how does somebody? Where's the tipping point where we can just walk in with Audrey Flanney Chief Inc. and say, give us another $2 million, we're buying another 5 houses, and they go, okay. I mean, where's the tipping point where the remodelers get to have financing as remodelers and go from being just Jim and Joe to being one of these guys that all of a sudden can amass all these properties? Is it, what do you think it is? Is it 10 houses you have to have where you can become a, you know, where they just lend the place money and instead of having to lend money to individual properties? Or do you have any idea about that level?
I have no idea.
But everybody, you've bought a lot of stuff for flippers and stuff. Odd, were they always, you know, put the money down themselves?
Well, it's self fund. They, you know, but it's like anything else. The bank will give you money when you don't need it. So, you know, you could be small potatoes and you're funding yourself. But when you want to take a leap into a big time, it's when you're small to middle, you know, when you're BlackRock, it doesn't matter. Somebody will always give you money. But when you're somebody who maybe wants to do 3 or 4 projects at one time, that's when you have, if you don't have your own money, it's pretty hard. You have to get, you almost have to get a group to self-fund.
Well, that's why this whole, and I'm not saying it's that this administration, but the last 4, you know, they give all this lip service to whatever it is, bringing stuff from overseas, being this or that, being infrastructure, whatever the hell it is. Whatever the stuff happens to be, they keep saying this is all going to go to the lower and middle class. But if you don't fix the big financing chasm where, you know, if we got 8 plumbing trucks and we want a ninth and say, I want to borrow 100 grand for my ninth plumbing truck, and they go, hey, Flanagan, get sign over your house just in case. If we, and by the way, you're 15% when everybody else is paying 2. If we don't solve that, I don't see whoever happens to be president getting what they say they want. Maybe they just say it and they don't really want it. They actually just want the big people to do everything. But I don't see, if we don't narrow up this financing divide, I don't see it ever happening. Do you?
Well, I think you have. There's always funding because there's so many people are sick of the banks. There's a lot of interplay in the places you go to the fund. So you, if you're nimble enough, you can find somebody to do what you want. But I think if the banks want to really help the country while they're paying out 2% on checking or 1.5%, they can lower down the credit card rates from 25% to 30%. That's what I'd like to see. Why are they getting to go to 30%?
You just spoke blasphemy. Lower the credit card rates, you're going to kill these poor guys.
I don't understand the 25% to 1.5% ratio there.
That's what I was just saying. Although you're taking it to a new level, yeah. Has there ever been a spread like that in all of
I mean, that's just about mob rates
from 2008.
Which not would, that I would know.
Well, which would be Obama, Trump, Biden, and now Trump again. With the Fed driving rates down at one point to what, 0.5% or something. The credit card rates during that, how many year period is that? 17-year period are actually up.
Well,
so
that's
so you don't know how accurate you are with this statement, right?
Well, that is, I think, the biggest indicator of why people are going into foreclosure, because not only has the average person been hit with price increases over the last 5-6 years, but the credit card are just gouging people. So the people who have charged their groceries and their car repair bills and are getting charged 25% a month, they might as well go buy it from the guy and borrow from the guy.
We heard wind from a friend who was trying to get some finance for somebody, and I don't know what business they're in, but they went to one of the Nienacker kind of guys. I think, Jimmy, you know more about this than me. Was it 30%, and they wanted payment by the week?
Yes. It was a hard money lender. It was actually, if you did it, it would have been more closer to 45%.
And they wanted money by the week, right? So it was like a six-month loan of like 100 grand, and they wanted 145 back, right? Well, for 6 months, it would have been 122 back. But they wanted payment. You had to pay them by the week, right?
Correct.
It's like a payday loan. I mean,
yeah.
That's like your little quarter shyster. Gosh, that'd be it's just like go back to old times, the 50s.
Well, yeah, I could see why you'd have horrible interest rates like that in a market where there wasn't much consumer credit because people were avoiding it and you had to make what you could off of it. But now that the country is awash in consumer debt, how can they justify these 35% interest rates, let alone late fees if you miss one payment completely?
I would say that is driving foreclosure rates. That's your biggest driver of foreclosure rates.
Well, the little story, when the people from the Fed actually came to work, that's another pet peeve of mine, not that anybody knows or cares. We had a table in the back of Ceres, and we'd all sit down and be some of those guys every night, and we'd all come sit. And I was, of course, doing my bitch at one of the Fed guys. Why are these credit card rates so high? He goes, well, do you have any idea how much these guys write off and they have to get like their money back? I said, well, okay, but they don't need to get their money back from me because of somebody else that didn't pay. And they said, well, you have no idea. I said, well, let me ask you this. Somebody goes out and buys, well, actually most people, I think credit card problems come from something they didn't expect, either a car repair or medical. But having said that, say somebody went out and bought $20,000 worth of furniture and a credit card, and then all of a sudden you can't pay it. By the end of the day, like 2 years later, when the person finally can't pay it and they have to write it off, that bill probably will be 45 between late fees, 25, it might go to 30%, those kinds of things. So I asked him, his name was John, I go, John, if you looked at the number, not that they write off, but the actual amount of the purchasers themselves, what do you think the numbers would be? Looked at me and says, well, you got me there, probably a lot less. So if Audrey or somebody goes out and spends $20,000 on furniture and can't pay it over 2 years, her final tab that they write off is going to be what, John? 40? 38?
Yeah.
Well, Jimmy, you know this. It's not going to be the 25 or the 20.
No, it isn't. And
lawyers' fees, you name it. It's all going to be in there.
The biggest, I think, you know, going to Audrey's point with these credit cards is this 0% financing. And most people, I'll pay it off in a year. They don't read it. And then they realize, you don't pay it off in a year. You're at 28%, 33%.
And they charge
all
you for
interest, too, even if you're pretty close to current on your payments. You know, you'll owe the interest on the entire balance.
Oh, yeah.
That's scary.
You know, having worked for a major bank, I could tell you that the credit card division, when everything else in the bank was not making money, they were making money. They were printing it. They have models. They know how many people will default on their credit cards. But again, they're also giving credit cards to college students who have no jobs.
True.
And they hook you very quick and very fast. And then when you get out, not only do you have student loan debt, you have credit card debt.
Well, I couldn't have credit card debt because the credit card they sent me in college, the credit card was a Union 76. They said, we think college students in good standing or good credit rating. Of course, the thing had like a 300-hour limit on it. And, oh, by the way, there wasn't a Union 76 station within 100 miles of South Bend, so I couldn't use it, so I couldn't screw it up.
Saved you from yourself.
They saved me from myself. Then all of a sudden, I had it for like 6 months, and I never used it. So we were actually heading out to go skiing somewhere. They canceled it because I never used it. So I call up and go, hey, I'm finally going to go somewhere.
If you do, you're dead. Yeah. If you don't.
Well, they gave it back to me for a month just because I was going on a ski trip, but then I didn't use it there either, and they canceled it again. Remember, Union 76 was a, what's the guy's name? Who was on the TV the whole time? God, talking about home. Murph. It was Murph, right?
Yeah.
God. Well, thank you very much. Hey, throw out a phone number, shameless plug.
You could reach me at 708-846-6494 or just send me an email at AudreyJohnson@realtor.com.
Well, thank you very much, Jan. Good stuff as usual. Jimmy, good contributions. Matt, nice job. SP Futures up 38, NASDAQ Futures up 172. We're to the moon, Alice. Today, I've seen nothing but green. The only I see down is Disney down 70. I don't know why that is. But that's like
that's
the only.
They suck.
Oh, God.
Go ahead.
We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right now.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. JetBlue Airways. It's not the only way to fly, but it should be. Visit JetBlue.com. Empower HR, your human resources partner. That's EmpowerHR.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. BDL Compliance Consulting. Visit BDLCC.com. DAX Research. Listen to David Andelman on Mondays and Thursdays and go to DACSResearch.net.
If peeing your pants is cool, consider me Miles Davis.